This is Will Friedle from Pod Meets World. Let's be honest. The 90s gave us some great things. The music, totally rad. The fashion, so fly. Home decor, that's a different story. In HGTV's new competitive series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars take on two homes frozen in time. Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets. Hello, 21st century. Totally 90s House. Special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
An hour, Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Thursday morning. Hope everybody is having a good day. Darren McFarland here. That's me. I'm live at the Patron Platinum Club. Don't forget, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube every single day. Yeah, you can do that. Today is a really good day to tune into that. You've already heard from, let's see, Kyle Busch, Chase Elliott, Brad Keselowski, all sitting there at the table. You can watch all that. And that's brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Also, go to thegamenashville.com if you want to check out some deals. We've got them right now. Half-off gift cards. It is the time for buying gifts. We've got half-off gift cards at our website to these great locations: Nashville Armory, Brooklyn Bowl, the Beanbag Coffee and Tea Shop, 312 Pizza Company in Germantown, Fat Cat Slim's in the Gulch. So go to thegamenashville.com/deals. Chase McCabe is across the street at the Music City Center, and I think if you're watching, you can see that he's got a truck champion at the table.
I have the truck series champion, Ben
Rhodes. Oh, I see what you did. You slid the in there.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The Ohio State. I like it.
He's the man. We were sitting here talking, I was asking, how's Nashville? And he said, well, he's tired because of all the activities that the truck series champion has to do. Ben, how you doing?
Yeah, doing good. Well, it's a lot of the extracurricular activities that are getting me later in the night. So
those happen here?
Yeah, I've learned that. I haven't spent any considerable amount of time in Nashville prior to this, so It's been quick learning, and every single night I'm getting influenced by all kinds of people.
Yeah,
Chase,
yeah,
you'll have to explain to Ben the Broadway flu off the air, okay?
The Broadway flu is a true thing.
Yeah.
It definitely happens. Usually hits the next morning, and you don't feel so great. Even the locals run into that every now and then.
Wow, that's incredible. You know, it's localized. That, you know, over at our hotel, we were having some cases of that, too.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Phoenix was obviously an awesome weekend for you to win the Truck Series Championship, but post race that was fantastic. Like this, how much fun have you had with it? Come on, you got to have fun.
I had fun. Oh, I had fun with it. I still won't go back and watch it. It's so
really?
Sober.
Yeah.
I was forced to watch it one day, and I said, all right, you're going to hand me another margarita because this ain't happening.
So is that what it was? Was it margaritas? Or?
Well, no, that was a champagne. And so here's the thing. They hand me this giant bottle of champagne as soon as you win. I'm dehydrated. Haven't had a drop of water yet.
Yeah.
Get my crew chief. He's doing the shoey. And they take us straight from that to the barn. It's a big party barn.
Yeah.
It's like 700 people. It's some stupid amount of people are in this
yeah.
barn. And they're throwing drinks on stage. I think I had four or five beers in about 20 minutes while I was sitting in there. And they take you straight from that party environment, DJ's playing, people are dancing, to this sterile press room. And that was in about 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
We made that transition. And on the golf cart ride to the press conference, I was like, I'm starting to feel it.
I was in there. I saw you walk in. I'm like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
He's feeling it.
Yeah.
He's feeling good.
The amazing part was okay, I've never had any, like, alcohol after a race before.
Yeah.
Not like in any amount of numbers. So I had no clue what it does to a dehydrated body.
Yeah.
So as soon as I had a water after that, it was, like, pepped me right up.
You're back.
Yeah. Like, I was like, I'm back.
Yeah.
I'm normal.
What's this ride been like, though, as now a champion? Because obviously, you know, we're talking about the truck series and how it's, you know, got its own niche now and going to some different tracks and some mainstay drivers, you know, like yourself. You've been there and now you're the champion. And so now people are like, hey, Ben Rhodes, okay, he's burning the truck down on Broadway. So it's got
to
be cool.
It's fun. It's fun to kind of start developing that identity, right? Because I've been in the sport for a while, but
yeah.
I feel like for the most part I fly under the radar pretty well. Not like meaning to, but it's just something I do. So kind of all came out at Phoenix, and we had a good time. And the truck series as a whole, man, I love that series. It's developed such a unique identity in the sport and the way that people race, and you got the old versus the new, and it's a lot of fun. The shorter races, the tracks that we go to. In the past, we've gone on to some of our own one-off races, and we always had huge crowds. Like, when we go to Canada, that would always be our biggest crowd of the year.
Yeah.
So I'm upset that we haven't gone to Canada in a couple of years now, because that was one of my absolute favorites.
Yeah, it's a good spot. You did come to Nashville, though.
Yeah,
back to the Nashville Super Speedway. Had you ever raced there previously?
First time.
What'd you think?
It was really, really fun. I just wish I had more practice.
Yeah.
it's a challenging track, right? Like, the concrete, the speed that you carry, and the way that it changes. You know, I had no prior notes. My teammate Crafton had been there before. He's the old guy, so I was trying to pull off of him. And, you know, he would kind of give me some notes, and we would try to go from there. But without the actual experience of doing it, you know, you try to relate it to, you know, a Bristol or a Dover or somewhere where you know how the concrete changes. But for the most part, it was an eye-opener. I've got a lot of notes now written down after that race, so next year I hope to perform a lot better.
Nashville is, you know, obviously the awards here. There's stuff with the fairgrounds that could happen back at the Super Speedway. It's a very important market for your sport. You know, to see the crowd last night, the burnouts on Broadway, I mean, how cool is that for you to realize, well, man, this team eats it, or this town eats it up?
Well, here's the cool part, right, is I live right down the road. I'm in Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
Born and raised, still live there. And, you know, it's not long ago that my wife was down here for her bachelorette party. She was down here for a different win. Well, yeah, we're part of that crowd that comes down here in the town. And I got to hear all about Nashville and how great it was from her and all her friends. And I've had friends that come down here, too. I know a lot of people that live here. And this is to experience it now live and then do, like, such a cool event like that.
Yeah.
That puts it in perspective for me. Like, she's like, oh, yeah, this is the bar. This is the place to go. And we're doing burnouts right down the street from them, or on the same road, you know, a block away. It's incredible. So I ate it up. I think the fans did, too. And what was neat to me was the fact that, yeah, we got some rain, but nobody cared.
Yeah.
We were all out in the rain. It's December, and we're all out in the rain having a great time. And sure enough, the clouds left, and we, you know, it was beautiful weather the rest of the night.
I was cracking up when they brought the air tighten out.
Yeah.
I was like, yes, that is awesome that they actually have this here.
Where in the world would you see another one of those at?
Oh, I know.
You're going to see an air tighten on the street? That's crazy.
It was fantastic. And so you went, you kind of, there were some drivers that went ahead of you, so it was rubbered up pretty good by the time you got out there.
You know, it was, but I don't know what I did. I must have found all the water because I went first gear, boom, right into second, and I should have gone maybe up to third or fourth or something, because I'll tell you, I didn't get as much smoke as I wanted.
Yeah.
I'm watching these other guys, they had crazy smoke, and I wasn't getting it. I did make my rounds. I went from one corner to the other, to one side to the other. I made sure to do plenty of that. Did some, you know, some good little drifting there, but other than that, I didn't get my smoke, man.
I
need more smoke. So maybe next year.
Did you feel extra pressure because you were the only truck?
Yeah. As soon as I'm about to pull out, I have literally the truck series officials all come up to me. They're like, don't screw up. It's no pressure. Don't screw up. You're representing us all. One guy to represent us all. Don't screw up. And I'm like, yeah, you calm down.
Yeah. You're not helping.
You're not helping at all. My blood pressure, as soon as I fired it up and I started taking off, the green light went up. I went. It was, I don't know. I just felt like I went pegged. I felt like I was back in the race again. Like, it was cool. Started going faster than I thought I would, and you know, the engine starts pumping, the heart starts pumping. It's kind of one and the same.
Now, was that a show truck, or did you have
that was our Phoenix backup truck?
Okay,
so that truck, we took the Phoenix. If something happened in practice, I was going to be racing that truck.
Yeah,
so that's the real deal. I mean, it was funny. I sat in that thing, and it's been 3-4 weeks removed out of Phoenix now, and I was ready to race last night. Yeah. I got in the truck. I'm like, this is it, man. I'm ready to go. Take us over to the speedway. Let's go. You know, so that was the real race truck, real engine, real everything. Like, that's as realistic as it's going to get.
Yeah, because I heard some of the Cup guys say, like, no, yeah, this is my backup car from Phoenix.
Yeah.
And then there were others like, oh, it's just a show car. And you could definitely tell the difference.
You could. And the show cars were typically the ones that the guys had a seat mounted in the side.
Yeah.
And you could hear the difference too, right?
Yeah.
But I think Larson, man, it sounded like a normal race car that he had.
I think they put a real motor in there.
I think so too. That was the real deal. So that was pretty neat.
So coming up on this season, a few changes at ThorSport, going to Toyota, and you're going to have a new crew chief, I believe.
Yeah. Well, no. That's how I started off this season.
Okay.
We went to Toyota, kicked it off at Daytona with brand new, brand new crew chief, brand new team for me. I'm in the 99 Bombardier Tundra, so I've got all new people around me. And now that we won the championship this year with all new everything, we're not changing it.
Yeah.
We found the magic formula, so we're gonna try to keep it for next year. I mean, there might be a couple changes here and there, small stuff, but for the most part, if it's not an improvement, we're not going to try to fix something that's not broken.
Yeah.
So
what's kind of the future look like for you? Do you try and keep it just one season at a time, or, you all have aspirations. Kind of how do you look at that?
Yeah, my aspirations are exactly where I'm at right now, like the championship, man. This was the goal for 6 years now, was to get to this point, and now I'm here. So I don't want to stop now. Let's go get eight more of these things. I love the truck series. So I don't have a crystal ball on what the future holds, but I can tell you we're going to work really, really hard to be back here next year. We're already making plans on how to make our burnouts a little better. He's like, we're gonna have to bleach the tires or something to get more smoke. And, we're going to put confetti in there. We're going to do all this stuff.
He's like,
we got to win the burnouts next year. I was like, okay.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Hey, Ben, good to talk to you, man. You're a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Best of luck moving forward. And
yeah, thanks.
Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Ben Rhodes, he is the Truck Series champion. Darren, I'll toss it back to you.
All right, good stuff there from the truck champion. Love his personality. And, oh, by the way, he can drive. Let's take a break. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on this very, very active Thursday show. We'll do that on the other side here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Our show rolling along. Darren McFarland here live at the Patron Platinum Club. Why? Because it's a Predators game day, and our broadcast is brought to you by Hermitage Design Center, the professional source for lighting, hardware, appliance, custom kitchens and baths. Go to their website, GoHermitage.com. Tonight's the Predators and the Boston Bruins here at Bridgestone Arena. 7 o'clock puck drop. Pete Weber and Hal Gill will have your call here on these airwaves. I'll have your pregame starting at 6. Don't forget, speaking of that, we're going to give you some tickets to tonight's game. Be listening here pretty soon. We're going to give you an opportunity to win tickets and be here with us tonight when the Predators take on the Bruins. Chase McCabe is across the street at the Music City Center. He's got another guest, so Chase, take it away.
I do have another guest. He is a three-time Daytona 500 champion, a owner in the series, driver in the series. Denny Hamlin is here with us. And Denny, I think it's the first time I've interviewed you, so it's good to have you on. How's Nashville for you so far?
It's good. Love the town. It's only an hour from my hometown. Well, not hometown, but where I live in Charlotte. And every time I come here, it's just it's a great joy.
To go back and race at the Super Speedway, and you raced there in the Xfinity Series as you were coming up. In fact, I think before your first Cup win, you ran out here in June and then flew to Pocono and won at Pocono. So that was probably a fun weekend earlier in your career. But what was it like to come back to the Nashville Super Speedway?
It was great. I mean, what I loved about it was the atmosphere. Coming back to this track after such a long time, the fans were excited about it. And that's what we love, is that the fan enthusiasm to have NASCAR Cup Series racing back in action here at Nashville. And what it looks like is we're going to be here for a while.
Yeah.
So that's going to be great.
Yeah, and the fairgrounds being a possibility. What are your thoughts on if you were to run two races in the same market but at two different tracks?
I wouldn't mind that at all. I think it would be a great idea, honestly. Fans like things that are different, right? And you would get two different types of racing at those racetracks. And so I think that, I was honestly worried about the Super Speedway having the infrastructure to handle all those people. It had been a long time. Needed a lot of upgrades, but I know the team that really kind of revamped that place, and they did a great job of doing it. So certainly I think if they keep reinvesting in these tracks, certainly they're going to be good enough for us to come back to.
The racing was fun too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Especially as big as that track is, it's hard really to get the great side-by-side racing that so many fans are used to and want. But that track is kind of a unique one where you get a little bit of both.
So you've had a few weeks to kind of look back on the season. You had a really good season. I know you wanted that championship. Kyle wins 10 races and ends up getting it. But how would you evaluate the season overall for you and your team?
I was very happy with it. Honestly, you know, without a caution, I guess, at the end of Phoenix, yeah. Like we were in a great shot to win. But honestly, there's not much I would change. We executed really, really well. I was up front most every single week with a chance to win. So that's all I really could ask for.
You also got your first win as a car owner, and I know seeing Bubba get that W at Talladega had to make you feel really good. It's been cool to see you as the guy that's at the track every week and MJ involved with 2311 and to just kind of see the growth all in 1 year. What was it like from the owner's seat?
Yeah, it is, and it's a building process. I mean, I try to reiterate to people that, you know, I'm trying to build, you know, a castle here, and we are still pouring the concrete. We're that low right now in the sense of, like, you know, where I want to be compared to where we're at. We're growing, which is really good. I'm hiring some very, very smart people to help, you know, with the speed of the cars. And, you know, I've got great resources with Toyota and JGR to helping out. So I'm very happy with the trajectory our team is heading. We're obviously hiring Kurt Busch this year, a champion of our sport. He wins just about every single season he competes. So I'm really excited about where we're going.
I've heard you talk about, you know, the drivers needing to do things now to kind of help with the future and preserve the future. But when you look at the owners and yours, Joe Gibbs, I'm sure he's been a huge help to you as you transition into this to kind of have that knowledge that you can pick from him or Coy or anybody, you know, the late great JD, that you can take that as whenever your driving career is over and you just go into full on ownership mode. It's kind of like passing it on to keep the sport going from a strong team standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you want new exciting owners coming in our sport. You know, there's, you know, been the GMS colleague and those guys that are going to compete in the Cup Series this year, but they've been part of our sport. They've raced in Truck Series or they raced in the Xfinity Series. You know, we were a true new team. Myself and Michael certainly has not been involved in racing, so we're a true new team. And that's what we need, honestly. We need to continue to have an influx of people that are businessmen that see NASCAR's business as something that they want to be a part of. That's what will help this thing grow in the long term.
And then, like I said, with the drivers, and I remember talking to you in Atlanta, and that was, you know, the stuff with the repave and everything, and everybody was outspoken, but the drivers getting all on the same page. You've been one of the leaders in the garage, and I've noticed that for a long time. Why is that something that you felt was so important?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, you know, the drivers deserve a seat at the table.
Yeah.
You know, not you don't always have to listen to the drivers. And listen, there's many things that opinions I have that are direct conflict of me being a team owner. But I'm a driver first, and then I'm a team owner second. And I believe that the drivers deserve to have a voice, you know, simply because they know more than anybody else when it comes to competition.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I say as a driver, NASCAR, tell us what kind of racing you want, and we will help you achieve it through telling you what we need to do to the cars to make them put on the show that you're looking to put on. And obviously, when someone goes rogue and is like, design something and says, we're going to have this type of racing – we look at it and say, no, you're not. Like,
right.
That's not going to work. But I also had some meetings that I understand both sides of it as well. Like, there is more to it than just competition, right?
Yeah.
And so that's something that I've learned over the last 12 months is being in some of these meetings, seeing other people's perspective and why they make the decisions that they do.
What are we going to see with this new car that you've had very little time with? And I know that's a part of the conversation of needing time, needing to be in the car, do more testing. But it's going to be at the Clash in L.A. and then, of course, Daytona. I know it's going to be a work in progress, but what's kind of some of your early thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's different. It, you know, that's something that you're going to hear a lot of. Every driver's going to say it's different. And but it's going to be an evolving process. I always like to undersell and overdeliver, not the other way around. So I think it will be a learning process. I think it'll take a few months for these teams to really hone in on this car and get the racing kind of where it needs to be. Certainly there's supply chain issues that we kind of are a little worried about when it comes to how many cars we're going to have to start the season. Do we need to preserve them and not wreck them early in the season? Like
at the Clash?
All that stuff like really, really matters. I mean, the first thing we have to do is be able to show up, right, with a car. And so certainly it's late in the game. We're 60 days from racing-ish. We better be ready. And certainly I think that NASCAR's got a game plan to make this car the best it possibly can be.
Kurt said that he wanted to keep racing because he wanted to race the new car. And obviously bringing him over to 2311 as Bubba continues to grow, to be able to – I heard Chastain say, like, being able to lean on Kurt was huge for him as somebody that's been a champion and won races. But is there that sense of excitement from your end, too, of there's so much unknown with this car that, hey, you know, it will be kind of fun. It'll be frustrating at times, but it will be fun.
I like change. I think change brings out, like, where do this, you know, you just have to be smarter than the next guy. Like, how can I find an advantage in something that's new versus the next guy? And it doesn't matter whether we're going to a new track, a new car, whatever. Like, we all are going to have to adapt. It's how much work are you willing to put in to adapt quicker than the rest? That's going to make the difference.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Have you gotten to play any golf in the off season?
I wish. I'm actually going down to Michael's course for the member next weekend. So I'm nervous about that because I haven't played any golf, and I'm going to be so bad.
Yeah. That's how that whole thing started, right? You and Michael
pretty much.
Met.
Yeah, we met. Way. Yeah, we just – Well, we met at a Hornets game. We started some dialogue, texting back and forth, and then we started playing golf together pretty regularly. And then, it just lent to this. And I honestly, I asked him, I gave him my business proposal through going down to his golf course and meeting with him and having a sit down with him. So I told him, here's what the plan is, here's how we're going to do it, and here's how we're going to execute it. And he says, let's go racing.
Do you just laugh at this point when you see – because, you know, I saw him in Phoenix.
I
saw him in Phoenix. I'm like, it's MJ. Like, it still is a kid that grew up, you know, when he was playing. And, like, there's still that.
I know. I guess I probably take for granted that, you know, I just have a personal relationship with him. And I see him as M. I don't see him as MJ or Michael Jordan. But I don't take for granted the significance of what he is as a person and an icon he is. I mean, maybe the most famous sport athlete in the world, right? I mean, I just don't know if there's anyone as big. So he's the man, and you know, he's been a great partner first and foremost. Is that, you know, in this whole process, and you know, obviously we're buying charters and buying all this stuff. Like, he's got to have faith that, like, I'm steering him in the right direction, and hopefully he's seeing some results from that.
Well, Denny, appreciate the
time.
Wait a minute,
you're going to let Denny off without asking who's the better golfer? Really?
Yeah, who is the best?
I would say when I'm at my best, we're pretty close. We are within a stroke or two, a stroke. Right now, he's probably better than me because he gets to play while I work on the race team. So
you
I do all the
you
work.
You don't get to play much during the season, I guess.
I don't. That's the one thing that I lost, honestly, this year with being, you know, team owners. I just lost the ability to go play golf twice a week. I don't have time anymore.
Okay. Well, we'll update. We'll get an update in Daytona of how it goes
went.
With the off season and see. But hey, appreciate you coming over here. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, man. Thanks.
He is Denny Hamlin, the driver of the number 11 FedEx Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. Darren, back to you.
Yeah, I mean, you got to ask that question. I mean, we got to find out who's the better golfer, Denny Hamlin or Michael Jordan. Good stuff. We'll keep this coverage rolling right along. It's been a very, very active show. You've heard from Brad Keselowski. You've heard from Kyle Busch. You've heard from Denny Hamlin just right there. You just heard also this hour from the truck champion. Who else am I missing? Kyle Busch, Brad Keselowski, Chase Elliott has already been on. Of course, the awards banquet is tonight at the Music City Center. Great coverage here on our show. We'll continue. Don't forget Silly Underdog Picks coming up at high noon. We'll review and make our new picks. Elliot Friedman coming up at 1 o'clock. You're listening to Darren, Donick, and Chase right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well done, Elijah. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Thursday. Darren McFarland here live at Patron Platinum Club. Don't forget to tune into our NFL Game of the Week on Sunday. It'll be Baltimore at Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers. That will have a 3:25 kickoff, and that is brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Don't forget, we've got tickets to give away to tonight's game as well. Be listening for that coming up here shortly. Let's go over to the Music City Center. Chase McCabe is standing by with another champ.
I am. The Xfinity Series champion, Daniel Hemric, is here with us. And I was telling him before we came on that I was at Phoenix, and I was standing on pit road and was with NASCAR president Steve Phelps watching the end of that race. And they had a late caution, and I remember just kind of thinking that Daniel's going to go for this, because at that point you had not won a National Series race, which is crazy. You're competing for the championship. And you had been so close, and I know how difficult that was. But you win the race and the championship, just knock it all out in one, and it was a fun finish.
Absolutely. If you're going to do it all at one time, may as well, right?
Yeah.
What a night, man. Talk about, being there with Steve Phelps, who was, the president of our sport, and since that night, having a chance to share a drink with him and just kind of reflect on exactly what you're talking about. Like, what a journey it's been, man, and to have that night go the way it went, really that whole week, kind of build what you said up a little bit more. I mean, our hauler on the way to the racetrack that week, our hauler driver runs over a deer carcass
in,
like, Texas somewhere or Mexico. And long story short, I didn't know if I was going to have a car to practice with. And, I mean, just whole slew of things that had to go right to even get us there. And to be in that position and then capitalize on it, what a night, man. Unbelievable.
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up, because that was obviously one of the biggest stories of the weekend. So what ended up having to happen, because Charlotte's not next door, you can't just go and get the car. So another hauler basically had to go pick up your race car?
Yeah, so typically, going to Phoenix, right? So our haulers leave out of the North Carolina, Charlotte area, and they typically be in the round one or two haulers of each other, so if one has problems. But somewhere along the lines, they got separated by a good amount of time. One guy needed a nap or whatnot. Hmm. And the way it worked out, when he ran over a deer carcass in the middle of the night, and we thought we had a cup hauler within like 2 hours of him, couldn't find out that cup hauler by the time my hauler driver, Matt, realized, hey, I can't fix this. There was an 11-hour gap between.
Oh, no.
So it was like, and the cup hauler was ahead of him. So it wasn't like, hey, we'll be there in 11 hours. Worst case, we'll be there. It was 11 hours past him on the way to Phoenix. So unbelievable the way things come back in this whole game of life. But a guy who used to work on one of my trucks in the Keselowski days in 2016, he lives out in that area, or he has buddies or friends, and one of his sprint car friends was happened to be in his truck and trailer in the area within like an hour and a half of where my guy was. So in a little toter home in a pull-behind trailer, not a big hauler like we have, goes and they unload my primary car, a jack, and like two or three little things for our car, like nothing, none of our parts or pieces that we would even
use.
No
backup.
No nothing.
Yeah.
That we would typically use for practicing or any race weekend. No scales, no nothing. And they got the bare essentials loaded in there, and they drove all through the night, and they rolled through the gate at Phoenix. I think it was like 23 minutes before green flag of practice. And NASCAR was obviously, they worked with us to let us get through tech and do all the things, but that's quite the process, man. And they, you can't make that up.
No,
you cannot
write that script any better.
It's funny because everybody's like, oh, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen to me. I didn't really play into that. I felt like no matter what the situation was, obviously you don't predict that's going to happen. But, in a day in our sport where we don't practice hardly at all, our cars leave completely prepared. I was fine, even if it didn't get there, as long as it got there for the race. Now, if it don't get there for a race, that's a whole other conversation we're having. But we felt prepared, and ended up being a little bump in the road, but a big part of the story when we'll be able to look back on it many years from now.
When in that race did you feel like, hey, I got a really good shot at this? I got a really good race
car. It was well before the race. In practice, for lap one, we go through all this, everything I just told you, go through practice, and lap one we go like third or fourth on the board. Out of 36 or 40 cars, I'm like, okay, all this other stuff, it took no focus away from our guys. So that just put us in a spot where, okay, car's good, it's fast, go to qualify top five, and then in the race we were always within striking distance, we were always close enough to do what we need to do, and cars got to fall a certain way, and as the race started unraveling, they did just that.
The Xfinity Series is fun. It's just that's the best way to put it. It's just a lot of fun. with drivers that, you know, either have been around for a while. You know, you've raced in the Cup Series. You've been around for a while. I think, actually, we talked to you a couple of years ago when you won Rookie of the Year in the Cup Series. But it just the door-to-door and side-by-side, like we saw at Phoenix, like we've seen so much. I mean, that's got to be fun just to put on the good show.
It is a blast, man. The package we run on the Xfinity side, right, with low downforce, the power, the weight, the tire we run, the majority of the venues we go to, it just puts on a great show. We're able to move around, slide around. Like, it's funny, coming to the start-finish line to settle the entire season. I mean, I'm feeding throttle, smoke on the rear tires. I am spinning the rear tires trying to move forward. And some of the packages, you know, the other levels nowadays, it's a lot of just wide-open throttle. And that's not the case with Xfinity cars, and that makes them a ton of fun to drive. In my opinion, obviously biased, but probably puts on the best shows of the weekend, and that's cool to be a part of that.
Are you thinking, like, I'm going to wreck him? I don't care. Like, we'll work it out later. I'm winning this thing. Like, I know if it's me, like, I just do the iRacing. I'm like, I'll just say I'm sorry afterwards.
Control, alt, delete, worst case.
Yeah. Checkers or wreckers, baby.
I tell you, every weekend leading to that particular moment of that race, you're making conscious decisions week after week to give yourself a shot and your team, this ultimate shot to get the Phoenix a run for a championship. When you fast forward through all the decisions you've had to make, the tough ones, the ones that led to maybe not your full capability that day. Heck, the week prior, I had to make decisions against Phoenix that cost us a race win. But it gave us that shot at Phoenix to do what we're talking about today. So in that moment, I think it is a bit of a anything, whatever you have to do. But I'll tell you, Austin Cindric, you know, he was the defending champion of our series, has been, and, you know, he stood up as a champion all year. Incredible guy, great racer. So I didn't want to go there and clean him out, man. I wanted to race him hard. And I knew he would have done the same thing. I'd have been disappointed if he was in my position and didn't do the same thing. So, you take your team to the racetrack with you. You know, they've been away from their families all year. All this stuff goes into those moments. And we just didn't want to be denied. Want to be denied. And it's cool to see it work out the way it did.
So you win the race, you win the championship, and then that's your last race at Joe Gibbs Racing.
Yep.
You're going to move back to College Racing. I think you've done some things with them before, is that right?
So when I did some time, obviously 17 and 18, Xfinity with RCR. That's about the time, you know, Colleague was new in their endeavors into the Xfinity series, and they had just, you know, done their partnership with RCR, so they were getting their cars from RCR,
right?
And then they, you know, kind of assemble them and work on themselves as their own separate race team. But through that, you had communication with them.
Sure.
But I've never driven directly for Colleague. So, but it's funny though. So, and when I started my NASCAR endeavors 2015. You know, I'd never driven stock cars of any kind. I go into the truck series, and the guy who ran the team I drove for was a guy named Chris Rice, and he is now the president of Colleague Racing. So that's who I got the call from, was him and Matt Colleague. And, so there's a lot of familiar faces there. So, yet I haven't driven for them before. I feel like I know a lot of the folks there, the men and women there, and they're class act people with a huge vision and a big goal of where they want to get to, and look forward to being part of that building process.
I knew there was some connection there.
You're on top of it.
The RCR. But and you know, to leave one place like Joe Gibbs that, you know, has a championship pedigree, how exciting is it though to go now to Colleague that is, you know, they've won races, they've won a cup race, they're moving to the Cup Series, to kind of be still on the ground floor of building something special?
You're right. To me, it's a new challenge, right? And I look back at the perspective. I try to keep the perspective of my career, and you know, just being frank with you, I knew when I signed with JGR, I had expiration date. Give or take. Now, whether or not you renew or don't, but I knew 365 days I was going to have some of the best race cars, and this year, obviously, Toyota Supers I could drive, and they gave me that. But that was going to come to an end at the end of the year. I didn't have the funding, didn't have the sponsorship, didn't have the means to be able to pull it off again from what it takes to obtain a ride like that. So to have the call from Matt Colleague and Chris Rice and like, hey, man, we want you to come drive our car. We'll figure all the other stuff out, but we want you to drive our car. You know, they took that chance well before I won this race and won the championship. So that's special. But I just look forward to that challenge, right? You talked about being kind of – they're laying the groundwork, and it's gonna be special to be a part of that, and hopefully we can do some good things together.
I want to ask you, because he was your teammate, but seeing Ty Gibbs very early and winning the races that he did. I mean, you know, you think, okay, Joe Gibbs' grandson, cool, you know, but kick and drive.
Oh, he's good. Yeah, Ty's very good, and I've told him that, and I appreciate who he is as a racer, and you know, for the most part, you get what you see, and I mean, for what it's worth, man, just that entire group, you know, that 54 car there at JGR, they just always were able to find that next little bit. I think they win 10 or 11 races, something.
Something like some, Kyle won a bunch and then Ty won,
some unbelievable number, and that is, I mean, that's special. But, you know, whether no matter where Ty comes from or who his parents are, grandparents, like, kid's got to hold the wheel and he's got to do a good job, and he does that.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, back in Nashville, Super Speedway out in June, or back in June, what would you think of that experience?
Great experience. My first time there. We ended up crashing out, kind of race for the lead there near the end, but great experience, and it's cool to be able to use kind of this, you know, at the banquet, kind of get everybody re-energized and be able to take them, you know, fairly close to here and put on a show, and obviously a lot of cool things happening here with the fairgrounds moving forward, so yeah, it's a fun experience, man.
Well, champ, have fun. Get a nap in before tonight.
I do need
a nap. I think you need that.
I do need a nap. I appreciate that. Yes, sir.
He is Daniel Hemrick, the 2021 Xfinity Series champion. Darren, I will toss it back over to you.
Good work, Chase. Come on over. We'll do Silly Underdogs at high noon. Good stuff over there from the Music City Center, getting ready for the awards banquet tonight. NASCAR wrapping up another fine season. All right, we will come back and wrap up the second hour. Silly Underdogs coming up at high noon, Elliot Friedman at 1 o'clock. But right now I'm going to talk to you about my friends at Creation CBD. You hear me talk about them every day because they present our show, and we're happy about that. And if you have aches and pains on your body like I do, whether it's because you're really active or you're just getting older or your body just provides aches and pains and you're kind of looking for that solution like we all do when we have the aches and pains, well, I've got it. It's Creation CBD. Creation means healing. And that right there says a lot. Creation is locally and organically sourced CBD products from right here in Middle Tennessee. From seed to final cell, Creation is passionate about providing quality products for everyday use, including your pets. You've probably also heard me tell that story because it means a lot to me. We have a female German Shepherd that has had seizures at an alarming rate for 3+ years. And it didn't matter how many pills we had her on, and how many vet visits, nothing ever changed until we put her on the pet tincture from Creation CBD. Everything has come to a screeching halt. Plus, she's lost weight, and she's a dog again. It has been a life changer for her and for us. So if you have a pet that deals with that, I highly suggest you look into this. You can order your stuff from creationcompany.com. It's Creation CBD, curated for life. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Our show is presented by Creation CBD, who you just heard me talk about. Products curated for life. Good stuff over there from the Music City Center. Chase McCabe anchoring the coverage over there, doing a fantastic job. The who's who in the NASCAR world is here in our city, and they basically just sat down in the last hour and 45 minutes at our broadcast table. So really cool stuff. He's going to head on back over here. Willie Donick is back in the mix. We're live at the Patron Platinum Club. It is a Predators game day, and they will be hosting the Bruins tonight. We will have Silly Underdog picks coming up in about 15 minutes or so. And don't forget, our game day broadcast here at the Patron Platinum Club is brought to you by Hermitage Design Center, the professional source for lighting, hardware, appliance, custom kitchens and baths. You can go to their website, GoHermitage.com. Things in Boston right now are not good. They are shut down. I was talking to somebody last night who has a child that goes to college in the area, and apparently you now have to wear a mask and everything to, they're back to, like, you know, what we were kind of accustomed to for a long time. To go see a Bruins game, you've got to present, you know, vaccine card. You got to wear a mask. Things are kind of in shutdown mode there.
Well, I wouldn't call it shutdown mode, but high.
Well, not shutdown.
It's like,
you're right.
It's like going to Canada. You know, do you have to be prepared to present the vax card? And they've got cases up there, and nobody knows it more than the Bruins because their entire team down the road in Providence is shut down. They can't play right now. They have too many COVID cases. The head coach of the Bruins, Bruce Cassidy,
not going to be here tonight, or not on the bench.
Yeah, he's in the protocols. One of the assistants, Chris Kelly, is also in the protocols. Fortunately for them, they haven't had any more cases, at least that we know of right now. I saw them all gathering down in the locker room area, so I'm guessing they're on the ice here. I'm looking to see if there's anything from their morning skate, but they would be in a tough position because they cannot call anybody up. It's not possible. Mm. They have the minimum amount of, they have one extra defenseman from their game they lost two nights ago against Detroit, but they had no extra forwards, including Jake DeBrusk, who asked for a trade. So he's a guy that they were healthy scratching because they're trying to trade him, but they have no choice but to play him right now. So it's a little bit of an awkward situation, but you never know. I mean, maybe it's the best thing because he can showcase what he can do, and maybe that would affect his trade stock. But it looks like he's on the move, and when we talk to Elliot, I'll be really curious to know, you know, what he's found out about the interest level in him, because I think there will be quite a bit of interest level. But everybody, I think, is going to be thinking, I want to buy low, because they're not in a position of strength right now. Don Sweeney and the Bruins. They don't have a lot of cap room as well. But yet, despite all these struggles, and Brad Marchand is suspended for the second game of his three-game suspension tonight, he's a guy that has played outstanding hockey. He is winning games for them.
No way.
Even more so than normal. Like, he's carried them so far.
Until he does his stupid stuff.
Yeah, and this wasn't a time of the year that would be smart to do that because they're kind of thin. But they still bring a lot to the table, and they're 11-8 on the season. They're right in the middle of the pack, just like the Predators are in the Eastern Conference, the Predators in the West. But in that mid-20s, point-wise, and just trying to keep up and find a way to surge, the Bruins feel like when they have everybody, they can win the whole thing. They're also trying to get Tuukka Rask healthy and maybe re-sign him, but they don't have enough room right now in their salary cap to bring him in. So they'll have to. That's one of the things about the DeBrusk situation. He makes $3.7 million against the cap. So if you can clear some space by trading him, that would allow you to sign Rask. But it's a really solid defensive team that's got those top-end guys. They've still got Bergeron. They've still got Pastrnak. They've still got Taylor Hall, who's probably going to be up on that line. Usually you would have Hall on the second line with Craig Smith, but they've got to elevate him because Marchand's not there.
We need to ask Elliot about DeBrusk.
Oh, big time. Big time. I'm very curious.
Right? Like, Juan, how's this going to play out?
Well, we asked him in the summer. Remember, that was a guy, we were looking at the Predators.
Yep.
They did not spend big dollars on free agents, other than, you know, they spent a little money to get Riddick, and they basically stood pat. They spent their money to keep Mikhail Granlund, and they saved the cap space, even after they traded Ryan Ellis.
They knew they're
and traded Victor Arvidsson.
Ekholm a contract.
No question. And that, we know the Forsberg thing's still out there. But they've got some cap space, and they chose not to sign anybody. And one of the things we were thinking is, you know, they've got a lot of young players they want to play, which is what's happening right now. But they've got room to add a significant salary if they can find the right guy. Now, DeBrusk is, I think, only 24 years old. He's a former first-round pick. And he had some great success a couple years ago. But starting at the beginning of last year and running into this year, he's hit a slump. He's fallen out of favor with Cassidy, the coach, and he and his agent asked for a trade. Now, what we found out is it went public the other day that he's asked for a trade. But in reality, the agent informed the Bruins months ago that he would like to be traded. And that had me thinking, you know, that's when about the time we were talking to Elliot during the off season about that. And he said, yes, DeBrusk is available. Now, I would bet you that the price was just too high back then. But I wonder if the price has dropped some since then. Because they just want to move on from him, it looks like.
He turned 25 in October.
Okay.
So he just turned 25. Do you know who he scored his first ever goal against, NHL goal?
I do not.
It was against the Predators.
Oh, I should remember that. That was opening night.
That was the opening night.
Oh, that was, yes, I was on the call that game.
Yep.
I should remember that.
You
yeah.
were. You were. I wonder what's going on.
It was
on,
a Bruins
though.
Win.
Yeah, I wonder what's happened there.
It's a good question. Because, you know, he offers what they need. The Bruins, we know that, what do they call it, the perfection line, is one of the best lines in hockey. And then their question is, do they get enough secondary scoring? Because they play a really strong defensive game. They're tough. They're disciplined. They just need to score enough. And you would think DeBrusk would be the perfect guy in there. For whatever reason, it just hasn't gone well. That's a good mystery. It's a good question for Elliott. So we'll see where it goes. But he's a restricted free agent at the end of the season. He's eligible for arbitration. So he's an expensive risk in some ways if you're going to keep him, because to pay a guy upwards of, you know, to qualify him, you got to give him, what, a 10% raise? So you're qualifying him closer to $4 million. So right there, you got to say, hey, I need production from that. But he's only 25. He's got the talent. He's had a year where he scored, I think, 27.
27 goals was his best year. He hasn't been a that's the only time he's been a 20-goal scorer.
Right. He has had, what, 19?
19 and, like, 16.
And that was at a real young age.
Obviously less games. He didn't play. He didn't play 80. That was not 82. I think the one was, well, we know last year was shortened. And I think the 1 year he must have missed some time. I think he played 60-something games.
So I've seen in all the rumors the last couple of days, what would you give up? I've seen a wide range. Like, would you give up, like, for the Bruins' sake, you know, they have to watch out for their salary cap. But do you want to go dollar for dollar, or do they want draft picks in the future? Some people think you could get a really good player that could help you right now for DeBrusk, which is what the Bruins probably in the short term would be looking for.
Let me ask you something. They've got a guy sitting in Milwaukee that isn't happy with his situation here, makes, what, $2 million a year in his final year of his contract? Is that something that maybe Boston would be interested in? I don't know.
It's a good question.
Like you said, I don't know. And I know it's not going to be apples, but they're also not going to get what they're looking for because everybody knows he wants out.
That's what the thing is if you're the Bruins, do you just want to get this over with?
Right.
And say, like, I've got to move on. Yeah. We need a new chapter. Let me just see what the best offer is. And if it's a package that includes
a draft Rocco Grimaldi,
maybe it's a B-level prospect and another draft pick.
Yep.
Like, I do think the Predators, we got this sense from Elliott in the summer that there was some interest from the Predators' end. I'm sure there's interest from a lot of teams on this guy, but the question is, what are you willing to give up? Because you're taking on a pretty good contract with DeBrusk, and he's got to produce, but he's an intriguing guy.
Yep. All right, let's do this. We'll come back, and we'll start the third hour with Silly Underdog Picks. But right now, let's give you a chance to be here with us tonight when the Predators host the Boston Bruins. 7 o'clock puck drop. I'll have pregame for you at 6. Pete and Hal will have your call. You'll hear everything here on these airwaves, but you can be in the building with us. But you got to answer this question. And, yeah, maybe a little bit unfair, but here goes. Last night on Smashville Live, Colton Sissons, it was Hal Gill and me talking with Colton Sissons the first half hour of the show. Colton was on Zoom, he was at his home that he built, and while he was waiting for the home that he's currently in, that he loves, he was living with two current teammates. Two current teammates he was living with while he was waiting for the house that he's currently in. Name those two teammates that he was currently living with at the time that we talked about last night, and you can be at the arena tonight with us. 615-737-1025. 737-1025. That is our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Yes, going to make you work for this. This is a great prize. It's tickets to tonight's game. So what two teammates was Colton Sissons, who current teammates was he living with when he was waiting for his house to be completed that he's currently living in? All right, we'll come back. Silly Underdog Picks. To start the third hour, that's next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.